Welcome to My Empty Hands, a conversation about martial arts, focusing on Kenpo. I am Reggie Darden, and I have Jamie Seabrook with me today. We're going to just have a little chat about Kenpo, about our journeys, whatever experiences that we've had, and we'll just kind of see where things go, and hopefully we'll get some nice back and forth, and we'll just take it away from this. So just to kind of give a little bit of my background, I originally started Kenpo in the mid 90s. I guess it would probably be around 93 or 94. Like I'm sure we're going to discover with many of the people that I plan to talk to, I got started after seeing the movie The Perfect Weapon with Jeff Speakman. As soon as I saw it, me and my best friend, we just immediately knew that that was something that we needed to do, and search for a school. Found a school that they represented themselves as Chinese Kenpo. Come to find out that, I guess to make things simple, it was essentially a Tracy's karate school. But after kind of doing a little bit more learning, I've come to find out that it wasn't a strict, I guess, wasn't directly a Tracy school. It actually, Ed Parker, before he kind of, I guess it would be a kind of a Kenpo 1.0 at the time. But as far as the lineage of the school, it was Ed Parker and then the Tracys, and then Dick Willett. Was a student of the Tracys. From there, one of his students, Ornette Chicken Gabriel, was my instructor's instructor. My instructor, Pete Salas, who I will be getting to talk to on a upcoming episode, was where I got my start. I trained for, I guess it was probably about 3 years, made it to my green belt, and was proceeding to go further, but I left for the Army in 96, and I guess that was probably the stop of my formal training. While I was in the Army, I did get to do a little bit of Taekwondo, a little bit of Hapkido, and also a little boxing. Was in the military for 3 years. Once I got out, I started to, kind of just do a little bit of training on my own. I wanted to get back into Kenpo, but I just couldn't find a school that really I felt comfortable with. And I didn't really want to get into any other arts. So I just kind of just did my own thing and just kind of kept my eyes peeled. Then I was, I had the opportunity to get involved in another art that I fell in love with due to a movie, and that was capoeira, because of the movie Only the Strong. And so I got involved in capoeira and had been doing that for, I guess, coming up on 17 years now. And just in, loving that, enjoying that. But I still always kept a place in my heart for Kenpo. And a few years ago, I found a school out where I'm living now. I live in, jump back a little bit. I'm from San Diego, California, And now I'm living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas. So I found a school out here, and it is an American Kempo school. And just kind of right away, I just jumped right in just loving the training. I'm finding that training now, I'm learning so much more. In my previous school, we didn't do freestyle. We didn't work on like the terminology and the principles of you know, Ed Parker's American Kempo. So it was really an eye-opening experience for me. Just, you know, by the time I got to my orange belt, I felt like I knew so much more than I did, you know, almost about halfway, you know, to brown belt in my previous school. So I was just really just kind of blown away by that. And I feel like I'm learning so much more. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, is just to really talk to people, get their journey, their experience, and, you know, hopefully maybe a side benefit is kind of help unite not only Kempo people, but just martial artists in general, and kind of get back to a better sense of just connection. I think with the advent of MMA, it's gotten more about things of the martial arts, I guess the kind of the respect and the honor and, you know, the kind of Mr. Miyagi way of training has kind of gone away. And I would certainly like to see that come back more. So, so that's part of my story there. So I will let you jump in and how did you get started? Kind of go from there.
Sure. Yeah. In 1985, we have an annual event here in London, Ontario, Canada, we call it the Western Fair, where we have, you know, captivating rides and, you know, lots of games, activities for kids and young adults, mostly. But at that particular year in 1985, I saw a karate demonstration that really piqued my interest. And I was going there largely for, you know, the scary rides, the cool food, walking around, but I couldn't take my eyes off one karate master that was putting on a really, what I thought at the time, incredible demonstration involving weaponry, for example, open hand kata, as well as things like board breaking, which I didn't know a lot about at the time. And anyway, I was there with my mom and my dad, and I couldn't leave. I had to keep watching this demo. So the very next night, this is 1985, I joined a Kempo karate school. So I'm coming up on 40 years in 2025 studying Kempo. Similar to you, my original Kempo karate school was not American Kempo. It was a hybrid Tracy system. My instructor at the time, Mike Donovan, had been a student of the Tracys in the Pennsylvania area, but had moved from the United States to Canada. And there wasn't a whole lot of Kempo in Canada at the time. So I got my original black belt in Kempo karate in 1990, my second degree in 1991. And then as a second degree in 1991, I decided to move to the American Kempo system. And while there were, you know, lots of similarities, particularly in the forms between American Kempo and the Tracy system, and a lot of the, you know, traditional techniques, although they sometimes went by different names, you know, sleeper, five swords, hammers, ones like that, I was able to pick up quite well. I was very dedicated in martial arts, and that was my journey. So I've been in Kempo now for coming up on 40 years, and it's been a heck of a great ride.
Excellent, excellent. Has Kempo been the only style that you've trained in? Have you experimented with any others? Or
yeah, Kempo is my home base. Again, it's my old the art that I've been studying the longest since 85. But it was interesting how it worked because my original school, the instructor there, Mike Donovan, had a direct link with Grandmaster Remy Precis and Modern Arnice, Spanish Filipino martial arts. So I believe it was 1987. It could have been 88, but I think it was 87 that myself, Mike Donovan, a few others started to travel a lot internationally to go to Modern Arnice training camps. I remember going to Delaware or to New Hampshire. I think we went to a lot to East Lansing, Michigan. And I became a student also simultaneously in Modern Arnice, although that was a few couple years after I started Kempo. I was fortunate to get my black belt directly under Grandmaster Remy Precis in July of 1991, the same year that I got my second degree in Kempo. So there was a lot of cross-training between Kempo and Arnice, and I think they blend together really well. And then to even throw another little curve in there, there was a guy who brought his son to train at the karate school that I was at, the Kempo school, and he was an incredible kung fu master. His name was Master Paul Chow. And so this would be around, again, 87, 88. And what Master Chow did is he took myself and maybe a few others from the school, 3 to 5 approximately, and said, hey, you know, when there's no classes, do you want me to share some kung fu with you? And I mean, this is a biased view, but I had never seen anybody move like that really in martial arts, period. So I also obtained my black belt in kung fu in 1994 under Master Paul Chow. He's a very, very strong, good kung fu expert in Canada, very well known. But all the time, I kept my eyes on the prize, which I believe is Kempo. That was always my passion. Mm-hmm. And then in 1995, I opened my first commercial Kempo karate school, where I taught American Kempo alongside with some cross training opportunities in Modern Arnice. And I taught a little bit of the weapons because this is my opinion, Reggie, but I believe that weapons training helped make you a more complete martial artist. And I was really fortunate to learn so many different types of weapons in my kung fu training. So I gave that as an option alongside the American Kempo curriculum when I opened my school in 95. And I guess that would be almost 30 years later. I've never closed my school. So it's been almost, just coming up. Next year will be 30 years of running my martial arts program here in London, Ontario. Our location has moved, but I love it.
Oh, no, that's great. And just kind of going back a little bit on the start, what was the specific style of kung fu?
It's called the Black Dragon Kung Fu. It was basically a mixture of northern and southern styles of kung fu. So you've seen a lot of the long range movements from, you know, high kicking, long range punching. And then it also incorporated a lot of the southern styles, basically what we see more of Kempo. So some of the Hungar, we did a lot of the traditional forms like Fu Hok Sun Ying, which is the tiger and crane form. And there was a strong emphasis on sparring at that school. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of, I guess to contrast it with Kempo, we did a lot of forms and weapons kata, and they were more complex than what, believe it or not, than what we would see in Kempo. Mm-hmm. But we didn't do a lot of self-defense techniques per se. We did that using sparring. And in fairness, I do accredit a lot of my sparring, and then saying this in a humble way, our school has a really strong reputation for producing very good people in terms of their sparring technique. And I accredit a lot of that to Master Paul Chow, because he was very, very good at you know, working on various sparring, kickboxing techniques, and we fought a lot.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think sparring is definitely something that is, I mean, you know, this is a combat art. And I think a lot of the schools now maybe don't do that as much as maybe they should. I certainly would like to see that more in various schools, because it gives you a very, you know, confidence building. One of the things that I love so much about martial arts and Kenpo is that it gives you these skills and brings out things in you that you don't realize that you have, or you don't think you have. I'm just going from my experience. I mean, I was very, very shy, you know, kind of typical nerdy kid. Didn't get involved in any kind of sports, which is kind of funny to me, because my older brothers are all sports guys. They did, you know, everything, and I just never caught that. Never caught on to that mindset or that lifestyle. But then once I did get involved in training, then, you know, I started to build some of that confidence and that drive to, you know, to try to be better and to try, you know, to get out of my comfort zone a little bit. And so, you know, even though I didn't, you know, I wasn't much of a tournament guy, or, I mean, I probably could count on one hand how many tournaments I've been to, but, you know, whenever we had kind of our in school tournaments, or, you know, sparring class every week, you know, was there and, you know, ready to go. Kind of have a laugh, because for my senior prom, I actually went to sparring class instead of going to my senior prom for high school. So I knew I'd have much better time getting kicked in the face than trying to show off my dance moves. So
it's interesting, Reggie, that a couple things that you said that I want to comment on, and I agree with you. The one is, I think it's easy to make someone look good. It's easy to make yourself look good when the other person's just standing there. Your uki's just standing there. And I, you know what? If I had a criticism of Kenpo, it's practitioners and black belts, high rank as well, that only do techniques and forms. Mm-hmm. Because I think you need more realism. You know what I mean? Like.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This is my opinion. I think the higher... Like, sometimes what happens is the higher rank black belt that you get, and I got my 6th, 7th, and 8th under Grandmaster Larry Tatum. And now I'm with Phasic Combatives Kenpo Alliance, mm-hmm. Which is a Master Todd Durgan, greatest guy, super good friend too, and mentor. But I got to say this, that sometimes you move up in rank and it's like people put you on a pedestal. And when that happens, you shy away from areas that can expose you, like sparring, right? But when I spar and I get hit, that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing, because it makes me go, okay, what went wrong there? How did I get caught? Right. And what can I do to continue to improve and enhance my abilities and bring more to my students? Since the pandemic occurred, I used to teach students of all ranks. And then, of course, everything shut down. It's a terrible mm-hmm. time, as you know. Since 2020, I've only been teaching black belts only. And that's been a really, really great experience with me. But even with the black belts, it's very important that they continue to stay on top of all areas of their training, whether it be sets, forms, self-defense techniques, freestyle techniques, whether it be weapons, whether it be sparring. All areas, I believe, are very, very important. And you also mentioned something about tournaments, which is interesting. This is going to sound so ironic, what I tell you. And I'm saying this, you know, honestly, humbly. I used to compete, you know, a fair amount. And I've, you know, through some trial, I did quite good. I won many national and international titles in fighting and forms and weapons, kata and techniques. But I'm actually against, here's the irony, I'm actually against sport. And I know that not everyone agrees with me, and that's cool. Some will say, well, you need that to test your ability. But I really struggle with point system. And that at note, like I won 5-3. Like, what does that really mean? Right? Maybe my exactly. Shot. Yeah. So I've really developed, I don't want to, if someone loves sport, good to them. And I encourage them. And if my students want to compete, my black belts want to compete, that's good. I'll never, but for me personally, I believe that martial arts is about self-defense. And like you said, improving your physical conditioning, your mental health, and less about sport. That's just really, and then I, one other thing I want to share. In 2012, January 2012, I basically said, you're going to laugh about this, but enough is enough. There's one area of martial arts that I can no longer hide from. And that is what to do if you're taken to the ground. So in January 2012, I started studying Gracie Jiu-Jitsu right from, you know, the legendary Gracie family, Hoist Gracie's nephews, Henner and Hilon Gracie. And we did it through, and we continue to do it through the Gracie University program. And I'll tell you something that's been amazing since I started January 2012 is that if your Kempo did not work from a stand-up position, why does one think it's going to now work on the ground when it wasn't even successful in the area that it was supposed to be successful from? So I recognized a weakness, and this is a big, you know, ouch. You know, again, people are free to agree. You're going to have other people on your show, but it's like, I'm not like a title guy. Like I understand there's different titles that go along with every rank. And, you know, with an 8th degree, you get the rank in Kempo of associate master. But I thought, hold on a sec. If martial arts is also, if we're being honest, the word martial, by the way, means warlike or militaristic-like, which doesn't coincide very well with sport. I'll just say that. But if we're going to say warlike, militaristic-like, like self-defense, how can anyone, myself included, this is a bit of an ouch, so we can talk about it, be truly a, quote, master if they have no idea of what to do if the fight goes to the ground? And martial arts is about self-defense. I just got to throw that out there. So I thought I as a 6th degree, I can't remember. Yeah. 6th degree at the time. No. Yeah. 6th degree at the time I slapped on a white belt and started Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. And it has been a incredible, but humbling experience because it's a whole other area. And Kempos often, Reggie, counter that and go, yeah, but the last place you want to be is on the ground in a real street fight. And I would go, yeah, I agree. But what if you're taken there? Mm-hmm. And who's more likely to get back to their feet? Someone trained in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or someone trained in Kempo? It's not even close. People train in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu up because they know what to do from that position, right?
Exactly, exactly.
So that has been a great experience. And I would say if there was one martial art, Reggie, that has improved my American Kempo the most, I would say Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, because nothing has changed in terms of my passion for Kempo. In fact, it's greater, but I look at things differently in terms of how I view certain techniques and how I might respond. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, totally. That's... actually, that's one of the things with my journey, and I keep getting reminded of. So, you know, I loved my original school. That was great training. You know, my instructor was great. We did a lot of great things. But the training that I'm getting now, we do a lot less we call air karate, you know, doing the techniques in the air and not on bodies is really been an eye-opening experience for me. Actually, just most recently, so, you know, I just recently tested for my green belt, and during the test, you know, had to do all the self-defense techniques on a person. And, you know, these techniques that you know, I know, I've stumbled on some of them because I'd been mostly practicing them, you know, in the air. And it's a very different experience doing them on, you know, on another person, the way they react, and it's, and the way the, you know, the way that it feels is very different. And it's like you have that feeling of, oh yes, I really, really know this. And then you start doing a technique on someone and it doesn't quite go the way that you thought it would. And it's like, oh wait, maybe I don't know this as well as I thought I did. So just that's been part of this, you know, training now is applying these principles and you know, it really kind of experiencing or getting a much closer to real experience has been just really, really eye-opening. And, you know, big credit to the Gracies and, you know, the UFC. I remember very vividly when the first UFC came out, and, you know, it's what all us martial artists are like, ooh, style versus style. Let's see who can win and what style is top. And, you know, the Gracies, you know, you could argue that the UFC, you know, the original UFC was essentially a commercial for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, but, you know, it really opened everybody's eyes to the, you know, yeah, you need to be able to work in all those different ranges, and, you know, you can't ignore the ground. You know, I love thundering hammers as much as the next person, but, you know, someone takes you down, it's not gonna help you. So
now, it's actually interesting you say that, because Horian Gracie, who was co-founder of the UFC, it's pretty cool, he actually signed my blue belt certificate. Gracie. Very nice. But he, before UFC, I don't know if you know how this all occurred, but when he had come to the United States, they had these, what they call Gracie challenge matches.
Oh, yes.
And they would occur like right in garages. People from all different martial arts styles would come test. And this is funny. This is true. This is explained all to me. Essentially what would, and Hoist Gracie was part of this. Essentially what they would do is they would never hurt anybody, but they would tie you up, get you to the ground, put you in an arm lock, put you in a choke, just enough until you say, uncle,
mm-hmm.
or aunt, or yeah, I'm just kidding, or you tap out. And then they would say, hey, would you like to be part of our school? And what happened is it started to grow and grow and grow and grow. And they said, we need a platform, like you said, to show jiu-jitsu to the world. Now, interestingly, in those original UFCs, like, this is where I do struggle with some of the Kempoists that like to slam Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. And this is, and by the way, I believe what, everything you're saying with harmony, that's what we want. But if we think of this from a critical lens, Reggie, when Kempoists go, you know, oh, that's not real fighting. You know, that's in an octagon. I would counter that and go, well, hold on. The only thing you weren't allowed to do in the original UFC was eye gouge or bite. And in fact, if you did one of those, the fight wasn't over. You just didn't get your purse. So you didn't get your pay. So here's the deal, right? And how I see it is that Hoist Gracie comes in at, I don't know, 180-ish pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, a small guy. He had the least amount of fighting experience of all of the Gracies. So I got a young guy who was a fourth degree black belt. By the way, I got to throw one little tidbit in. When people go, well, if you've never been in a street fight, you shouldn't be talking. Hoist has never been in a street fight in his life. He still claims that. Zero. So here's a guy that just said that his father, Elio Gracie, told him, I'm not training you to be a fighter, Hoist. I'm training you to be a teacher. So he takes all this technique and says, I have confidence it's going to win. And sure enough, you know, He does the very typical Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. We keep the distance. We close the distance. We get close. We tie you up via clinch. Maybe we do like a leg hook takedown, take you to the ground, side mount, whatever it might be, finish the fights. And at the time, karate, kung fu, taekwondo, doesn't matter. All of these styles were not prepared for what to do in those scenarios. And I've heard some people go, I didn't like Hoyce's fighting. He barely even hit anybody with a punch or kick. Well, to me, that's genius. Why would he start to go, I'm going to match the stand-up versus stand-up? He's going to stick to what he's good at, and that is distance management, clinching you and taking you to the ground. And if you think about it, okay, so I'm a, in my other life, in my other, my same life, I should say, I'm a full-time epidemiologist. I'm a PhD, and I'm a statistician. And we, what I do is I deal with statistical odds. So what that means is if you have Hoyce Gracie and you have a guy, someone training stand-up, the person in stand-up might win. But statistically, their odds are much lower because what must they do, Reggie? They must land the big punch or the big kick and land that knockout shot. Whereas Hoyce, if he gets his hands on you, he has dozens, I take that back, hundreds, I take that back, thousands of ways he can tap you out. You see what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
Statistically, the odds are going to be in favor of, say, Hoyce and his technique versus the stand-up. So for me, I went, I can't lie to myself anymore. This is an area that I know. I can watch all the UFC I want and act like I know what a triangle choke is and a Kimura. But at the end of the day, I want to learn some of that to make my Kempo better. And that's kind of the journey that I went. And again, my number one passion is always American Kempo. It's what I've done for now for 40 years. But the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu has really helped a lot and changed my way of thinking on many things.
Yeah, that's another part of what I love about Kempo is that it works as a good base for connecting with other arts. So, you know, dating myself, but, you know, of course, was a big fan of watching all the Panther production videos back in the day. And one of those ones that really stuck out to me was one by David German.
And he was awesome. He,
you know, mixing Kempo with jiu-jitsu. And, you know, I was just in love with that. You know, I'm a big fan of wrist locks and arm locks. And so it's like, I can do these nice little wrist locks with the Kempo strikes that I love, you know, one that just never went out of my mind or went out of my memory is, he would, end flashing wings with, a nice little arm bar, a little, nice little wrist lock. And I was like, it just fits so well. And me and a buddy of mine, we would, you know, on the side, we would just like, okay, we're going to pick an attack and let's just work that attack. You know, you got a right punt, right cross. Okay. I'm going to start with this defense or that defense and just try and kind of meld in all the, you know, all the little other pieces that we could pick up. You know, we had friends that did taekwondo, we had friends that did jiu-jitsu and stuff, and just any little bits and pieces that we could get from them or get from whatever Panther videos we could get our hands on, you know, whatever we would see and see in the Black Belt magazine. And it was just like, okay, how can we just connect? And with Kempo, it just always seemed to fit. It didn't matter if it was a, you know, grappling or kicking or something like that. There was always just this piece. It just always fit in so well. And so that's definitely one of the things that I love about it. And I love kind of keep coming back to it. And, you know, now with MMA being where it is, you know, you can still see that, you know, the DNA of you know, these different arts and stuff connecting. And so that's always been really exciting part for me. So
yeah, it's interesting. And you know, it kind of had a little trigger there. Someone who I have a lot of respect for I also consider him a mentor. His passion for Kenpo is just incredible. It's Grandmaster Dennis Knatzer. And I'll tell you why I'm bring him up is I heard him on the Mind Sensei podcast, I believe it's called. Yes. And he said something really interesting. He said, and I'm like, okay, it's exactly how I think. But it was nice to hear it from a senior like him. He said, make no mistake about it. If Ed Parker were alive, he would have incorporated more jujitsu into Kenpo. Because essentially, Ed Parker was a little stubborn. This is basically a paraphrasing. He always was thinking ahead. He was decades ahead of his time. And, you know, now this is Jamie Seberg speaking, but my guess would be if he would have seen what would have happened in the early UFCs by Hoyce Gracie, he would have went, we got to do something about that, right? And that is the cool thing is that Kenpo is not a pure art. It's not a traditional art. It's a modern evolving format, right? Where we have this base curriculum. And I got to tell you, Reggie, I teach the full curriculum, all 154 self-defense techniques, plus the additional three that were removed, aggressive twin, spreading branch, intellectual departure, all 96 extensions, all the one and two sets, you know, everything, club set, form seven, form eight. But I also believe that there's that modern evolving that we have to continue to find ways to not keep Kenpo stagnant. So once we have that base curriculum, what might we be able to do? So, you know, I'll make one up. We have five lance techniques only, five knife techniques, right? Mm-hmm. They're fine. This is me speaking. I believe that a lot of them really lead to category completion, and meaning that there are moves in there that basically have gaps that we could do to work to improve our defenses against knives. And of course, as Remy Priestess, my former teacher, used to say, how can you really learn how to defend against a knife if you don't know how to use a knife? So what I'll do with my black belts is do a lot more of the knife drills from FMA so that they get that exposure. That doesn't mean they become knife experts, but they're getting that constant exposure of learning how to work with the knife rather than wait till fourth degree black belt where your next form is form eight. Which, you know, what percent actually even get there?
Yeah.
Get to learn form eight, right?
And yeah, exactly.
And I have I agree with you with what you said when you started this podcast. You said, I really want to unite Kenpo. Like, double thumbs up for that comment. And regardless of lineage, like, I will say, this is me. I think there's two others in American Kenpo that have done a very similar approach to recognizing that Kenpo does not have grain. And that's Jeff Speakman. Mm-hmm. So shout out to him in the Kenpo 5.0 group, and Muhammad Tabatabai. Those two and myself, I feel, and that doesn't mean that others aren't doing it, but those are ones who really recognize that we have to incorporate jujitsu to evolve Kenpo. And that's kind of where I am with things. I know, again, you know, the danger techniques, for example, encounter with danger, leap from danger. Basically, what is danger? Danger is if you go to the ground, you don't want to stay there long. I get
exactly.
it. So those two moves, we get back up. But again, that's pretty much it. Those are the two, quote, ground techniques. It's not enough. And even, Reggie, I would go, if you look at the RAM techniques, so green belt and below in American Kenpo, RAM signifies tackle. And we always say Kenpo is taught in three phases, ideal, what if, formulation. I'm going to go time out here. If phase two is what if, this is something to ponder. Why do the what ifs not address adequately, if at all, if the tackle actually takes you to the ground?
Yeah.
You see, so a lot of the what ifs, well, what if we did this, we did this? Yeah, but ultimately, if you're trying to tackle me, Reggie, it's usually not to give me a hug.
Exactly.
Right? You want me on my back, right?
Yeah, that's exactly.
But yet, we say we have ideal what if formulation, but none of the RAM techniques, in my opinion, adequately address what if they actually succeed at what they're intended to do and get you on your back. Well, you know, sucks to be you. That, I guess, not a great response, right? So Reggie, you could see, you know, bigger than me. You get me to the ground. I have no idea what to do. My delayed sword's not going to work too good if you're on top of me now, because
yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no one art that has all the answers, and it's funny that, you know, now with MMA and now that there's so much more, you know, connection about the other arts, that we still have people that are like, oh, well, you know, my art has it all and can do it all. And it's like, no, there's always somebody that knows more. There's always somebody that's better. There's, you know.
Yeah. And even I don't want to make it sound like it's a BJJ podcast, but I remember fighting in a big BJJ tournament in Toronto, Canada. And I also witnessed something I didn't like. Like, I don't like this. I didn't like the point system. I had the person in my guard, and, you know, they're accumulating points. I don't know why. Right. And one time when I reached out my hand and I apparently tapped them in the forehead, and the guy says, you know, ref, he's not allowed to touch me in the head like that. Like what? Like, it's kind of like, this is a real fight that fights stand up. But this is why I love, you know, alongside American Kempo, Gracie Jiu-Jitsu so much. And this is what I didn't know, Reggie. I assumed that all Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was ground. And I think that's what most people believe.
Yeah.
Here's a bit of a surprise. Well, it came huge surprise to me. After, again, January 2012, I started Gracie. I have learned more standing techniques in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu than all of American Kempo from white to first degree of the 154. Hmm. They have so many moves that start from a standing position. And that includes not just wrist grabs, collar grabs, chokes, headlocks. That includes club, knife, gun, etc. So the Gracie focus is pure self-defense, whereas Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is kind of an overarching umbrella, does in general tend to focus more on sport. And you said to me, and I agree, my focus is not sport. And this is why I'm so attracted to Gracie Jiu-Jitsu alongside my American Kempo, because I go, okay, American Kempo is definitely street self-defense, and so is Gracie. So harmonizing those two is just, it's a great feeling. I love sharing it with the black belts that I teach.
Yeah, I've dabbled in the BJJ stuff. I was, you know, to be honest, not really a fan of it, just because of, you know, I don't really want to roll around on the ground that much, and I'm not, you know, interested in the competition. But yeah, I've been finding out, you know, or I've been hearing more and more that, you know, the Gracie side of it is more self-defense oriented. And, you know, that's something that I could get behind. I need to see if that's the case. So the Machados are out here where I'm at. So I've been interested in, I've been giving BJJ a little bit more of a look since finding that out. But yeah, I'm more interested in the self-defense part of it, and not at all interested in the competition. So I kind of strayed away from doing that before, you know, I got back into Kempo. But I'm just so kind of in love with everything that, you know, there's not enough time to do everything. I mean, I was looking at getting back into Hapkido. There's a Hapkido school that's not too far from me. I just was in a Kali seminar the other day, and so I'm kind of thinking about, there's this online program that I'm taking a look at. And but then there's also kind of the traditional stuff. There's a Okinawan Shorinru and the weapons, and so, you know, taking a peek into that, because, you know, as much as I love Kempo, I would like a little more weapons, you know, even though, you know, some of them aren't particularly practical in today's world. But, you know, I like the traditional you know, things as well. So, you know, so many schools and so little time, but, after my, my most recent test, I think I need to keep my focus a little bit more.
It's definitely a journey, you know, like I think it was my purple belt test. My goodness. I was very young at the time and I thought I should have failed, but they passed me. And I thought, I didn't deserve to pass. I was butchering techniques. No, I was a young kid. And the names were killing me, but I didn't think I should have passed. And I remember thinking after that, never again. And then I think I was blue belt, and you'll probably know this name, Wally J.
Oh, yes.
Wally J came to our school and did a seminar, and I left after the seminar. I think I was blue. And I'll say up to that point, when I, you know, the school I was at, we were kind of forced pretty much to compete. And, you know, I always did very poorly on every tournament. And I thought, I'm not liking this. And Wally J comes and does a seminar. I went home that day and I said to my dad, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but because of that motivation, all of a sudden I wanted to win. And after obtaining green belt, I had never competed in a martial arts tournament humbly and not at least get in the top two. And at the end of the day, if I didn't get it, I didn't get it. But mm-hmm. It's like, why am I going to something expecting to lose?
Yeah, that's exactly.
I was expecting to lose because I always lost.
Exactly.
And Wally J inspired me for his age and his skill level. And I thought, if I'm going to lose, they're going to have to get the best of me. And it changed a lot. And then my desires, I went in, you know, knowing win or lose, it's okay, but I'm expecting to win. And that's just a way of changing your way of thinking a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you go into something? It's like when you go into the UFC and you see someone screaming after they win. It's like, did you expect to lose?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you're going in thinking you're going to win. You're putting your life on the line, right? And that's kind of how I kind of viewed things, is I want to go in expecting victory. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I love that you brought up Wally J. So my original instructor did some training with Wally J. And we were doing a seminar and then we were talking about small circles jiu-jitsu, which I wish there was a small circle jiu-jitsu school near me. I would be there in a second. He's talking about, you know, how small circle jiu-jitsu works, and we're all just kind of sitting there like, come on now, you know, whatever. And I was like, oh, well, you know, let me show you. And I got to be the dummy, and he took my finger and proceeded to throw me all around the studio. And I couldn't believe what was happening. And, you know, he's just like, oh, you know, try and get away from me. And he's got my index finger and trying to get away from him. And this was when I was a, you know, young teen with a lot better shape, a lot more energy and strength and stamina. And I could not get away from him. And he was just tossing me on the floor and, oh, okay, now get up. And he would pick me up on my finger and toss me down again. And I still just in disbelief. But, you know, it's amazing. So I just really, really, really love that, and really love all the arts and all the great people that have come before. And
same. And that's why, you know, with all these great martial artists out there, Parker is really my Bruce Lee. When people, you know, and the reason is that I recognize how many decades he was ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have been really fortunate to be able to teach this art for many, many years and have so many great mentors along the way. And I just want to, you know, leave that and share that with people. It's kind of cool, Reggie, when the pandemic hit, and you know, we weren't allowed to teach it in person.
Mm-hmm.
I created well, I should just say my wife encouraged me to create an online class. We didn't know how long this was going to go on for. I'm like,
yeah,
I can't take away my Kempo. So I created an online class, which was literally meant to be temporary until the pandemic ended. And we had very few people on, and then a little bit more. And now we have this, it's so cool, that started during the pandemic. It was supposed to be temporary. We have an international black belt class we do every Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have black belts from all across the United States join us, and Canada, and even sometimes Chile. And it's really turned out to a group where it's not lineage specific. We got people from countless lineages that come out, and regardless of lineage, we're all like this. And all it is really cool. I share my knowledge with them. I teach the American Kempo curriculum in a linear fashion. Mm-hmm. So what are we on right now? We're on green belt extensions. Yeah. So working on that. And for people that, you know, I think our highest rank on that is a 6-degree black belt. And our lowest would be, we have one that's just ready to test for black belt next year. But for that group, you know, if it's above your belt, they're still getting better at the green belt base techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So getting many reps in. And you know what? It helps when I see black belts from all across US and Canada and Chile who are that eager to learn and get better at Kempo, increase their knowledge, increase their skill level. It just motivates me as an instructor to bring more to the table. Like, it's like, if you hold the rank, you better keep it up, right? You don't want to, you don't want to surge performing surgery on you that hasn't performed a surgery in 10 years, right?
Exactly. Right? So, keep everything fresh. And
so they motivate me to bring more to the table every Thursday. And I'm super excited. Next February, 2025, I'm going to be spending a week in Chile, in Santiago, Chile, giving Kempo Karate seminars there. So that's kind of
nice. Nice. All right. Well, so I've got a few little questions we'll kind of get closed out here with. One would be, what is your favorite technique, or maybe three of your favorite techniques if you can't pick just one?
It's often the one I'm teaching. I actually mean that. I don't know if I could handpick three.
Mm-hmm.
I love so many of them. I honestly, it's often the one I'm teaching, because the one I'm teaching is the one where I'm zeroing in, trying to get all the details and explain everything, what it's related to, and family groupings and all that. I don't think I have 1 to 3 that I could actually name as my favorite. Same with forms.
That was going to be my next.
All right. If I had to pick, I'll say short form 3.
Short form 3, yeah. Right on. I've always been partial to book set. That's kind of been my fave. I remember always liking long 3, but it's been a very, very long time since I've done it, and I've got to, you know, sort of relearn it.
It's interesting. It's interesting about book. You mentioned book set. I do book set as well, but you know, it's not a required American Kempo form,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I was a little disheartened when I started training at the school that I'm at now, and I was like, I want to do book set, and it's like, no, we don't do that one. I was like, darn it, that's the one that I like.
So call it the Panther set, and the Chinese sometimes call it the box set. It's a beautiful set.
Exactly. But you know, I still practice it. So I got some practice videos from my original instructor, and so I went back and realized I remembered quite a bit more of it than I had thought. But now I can get through it. And so I've been working on that one, and Mass Attack, which I've seen that you did video on that one as well. So, but yeah, book set's still my favorite until I get to learn a long 4, and I need to find a way to learn Tiger and Crane. That also was one that I
it's a great one.
always thought was great. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Yeah, I'd probably say either the sticks, Kali stick, you know, Kempo would call them club. I say the sticks or the knives. I do a lot of stick and knife work because of Filipino martial arts, and I find those very practical weapons. Mm. Oh, but the other non Kempo weapon that I do a lot with is the long spear, and that comes from my kung fu training. I really enjoy it. That's like my fun playtime.
Yeah, no, the staff and the spear are always been my favorites. And then the, you know, Eskrima sticks probably coming in third on that. Okay. And then if there was anyone that you could train with or have trained with, living or dead, you know, fictional or non-fictional, who is, you know, maybe somebody that you would want to train with or have trained with?
Yeah, so I've been fortunate to train with many of the Kempo, you know, seniors, and I'm very happy about that. But there's two that I never trained with. Two people I've never trained with that I wish I would have had. They're no longer living. The first is Ed Parker. I actually met Ed Parker and had an opportunity to do a demonstration right in front of him in May 1990 at the Canadian Internationals tournament here at Western University in London. That year, unfortunately, he passed away. So I met and chatted with him and performed in the evening show a Filipino martial arts demonstration with, at the time, we could get away with it, with live machetes. I never trained directly under Ed Parker or took lessons with him. So Ed Parker is number one. He'd be my top that I wish I could train with. And the other, the founder of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, co-founder, I should say, Elio Gracie. Elio Gracie and Ed Parker would be the two that if I could make it happen, that'd be maybe sometime in the afterlife.
Exactly. Right on. Yeah, no. Yeah, for me, definitely Ed Parker. I mean, you know, just as you mentioned before, you know, he was definitely ahead of his time, definitely, you know, just visionary and the art and kind of where things were going. He just had his finger on the pulse before, you know, anybody else realized it. And so, yeah, definitely there. Had a chance recently to do a seminar with Bill Superfoot Wallace, and that was he's an amazing, just amazing person.
I would have been several with him also.
Definitely like to train with him. So, all right. Well, so we will kind of wrap things up. Is there anything else that maybe you'd like to mention or bring up? Or
there's one big one, and I'll be really quick.
No,
thank you for doing this. This is a real contribution to Kempo, and seriously, I really applaud you for doing that. I don't like to make it all about me. Without you doing this, people don't know all this information. So that's the most important message from this whole last hour we've done, Reggie, is a major contribution. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for being a part of this. You know, I'm just excited to get to speak with you, and looking forward to all the others that I'm going to chat with. I've got a few people already lined up this week, so I'm pretty excited. But you know, for nothing else, you know, I just like to hear the stories. I like to talk to people, and you know, I just hope that other people, you know, can benefit as well. You know, no one else listens, that's okay. As long as I get to hear the story, then that's I'll the main sure thing. So
as well.
But
as
but yeah, just all about learning and growing, and we'll just keep on the fire's going, and We'll see where this goes to next. So again, I thank you so much for your time, and I can't wait to see what comes next. And we will close it out for today. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.